Hugh Phillips joins the show now. Welcome, Hugh.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Great, great.
Well, I would think so. You just put out a CD, so you must be great. Are you happy with it?
I'm super happy with it.
Why?
It's been a long time coming.
Is that why it's called It's Been a Long Time?
It is why it's called that. My wife was giving me a hard time for so long that I decided that would be a great name for it.
Giving you a hard time about finally getting up off your butt and doing it? Is that what you mean?
Pretty much.
Yeah, wives are good for some things like that, aren't they?
That's right.
That sounds like a country song. There's another song for you, Hugh.
Record.
So why are you happy with It's Been a Long Time, Hugh Phillips?
Well, it's an amazing project that I did not expect it to come together the way it did. It exceeded all my aspirations for a great country record, in my opinion. My mom promised me back 6 months ago that I'd be sick of it by the time it actually hit the streets. And you know what? I heard it today on the radio, and it just blew my mind. It was great.
Nice. Is that the first time you heard one of your songs on the radio?
No, but it's probably still in the top 10 times I've heard it on the radio. So
that's got to be a thrill.
It's pretty exciting. Definitely makes my heart beat a little faster when I hear it on the radio.
Well, I noticed that you're 51 years old. Why did it take so long to put out a record? I guess because you had a career for quite a while that you recently ended.
Yeah, I've been a mechanic or auto technician all my life, basically. Always tinkered with mechanical things. And I just, you know, the health aspects of being around all those chemicals take their toll. And also this stress was really heavy duty. And I really just missed putting time into music like I used to when I was younger. And so I just kind of committed, probably 8 years ago or so now, to really just hunkering down and honing in my craft and learning about songwriting and playing my instruments better and just really learning what it takes to move forward in the music world. So
it's obvious if you want to get better at instruments, you practice. But how do you get better as a songwriter?
Same thing. It's just like creative writing or anything else. You just do it a lot. There for a while, I was writing every day for a minimum of 10 minutes, just as an exercise with no particular reason as to what I was going to write. But I'd sit down every day before work and just start plugging away until something started coming together. And each day it improved. It was a really interesting exercise.
Just plugging away. Does that mean noodling on the piano? Do you write on the piano or on the guitar?
You know, I write on paper, believe it or not, okay. Not to be snide, but I do write on paper. And then a lot of the time I will take an instrument, whether it be the piano or the guitar or sometimes the mandolin, and kind of create based on the cadence of what I've written, if that makes sense.
Okay, so on paper. So you're writing the lyrics first is what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah. I really try and get the idea with the lyrics first, and then I'll read them out loud. And it'll, like reading a poem, a lot of the time it develops the cadence. And then that can kind of tell me what the music wants to be. Okay. But it can work in reverse, too. Sometimes I've woken up with a lick or two in my head, and then, boom, there's a song. And then I write around the lick or the music part. So,
That's interesting. So when you do that, when you write your lyrics first, Does the music always come right away, or do you put it in the top drawer for a while and let it bubble in your brain? How does that work?
Yeah, I've got, I feel like Highways was 6 months apart on lyric to music. And that's one of the songs on the record. And that's one that surprised me time and time again since I wrote it, because I never really thought it would even get off, get out of the spiral notebook and into any sort of you know, appearance on a record or anything else. So,
well, obviously these days nobody, no musician is touring right now. But back in the good old days, were you practicing your new songs on stage to see what kind of a reception they got?
Good question. Some songs I did because I felt that they would fly. Other songs I just kept in the studio or at home and just played them until they sort of settled in to where they wanted to be. I kind of liken it. I have a friend who's a stonemason, and he says, you know, certain stones want to be in certain places in a wall or in a building. And there's just nothing you can do about it. You just have to keep fitting and fitting and fitting until that stone says, okay, this is where I sit. And the songs are kind of the same way. So
like
sometimes
the, I was going to say, like, the words are in the right place, or the chord progressions, or both?
Both. Both. Really the whole package. You know, for me, once I write a song and get an idea of how it's going to play a little bit, I will woodshed it, meaning just play the dog's knot out of it until it kind of settles into its groove. And a lot of the time it may take three or four arrangements before it ever, you know, before it ever even comes to fruition into a real song. And sometimes it just crash lands and it's no good. It gets shelved.
Do you know right away when a song is right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
You wrote all 12 songs on this CD. Which one is the one that you're most proud of?
Man, I don't know. That's a tough call. For this record, I would probably have to say "Sunset for a Cowboy." It really relates. I wrote it here in Missouri Heights, where I live, looking out over all the fields and the horse country up here. And it just really, I've listened to it all over the country since I wrote it, and made, you know, rough recordings. And it just always brings me back to this beautiful valley that we live in. And I consider the cowboys of the days of yore that, you know, just are kind of miffed at what's going on in the world these days. You know, with the rangeland and just the encroaching of the West, as it were. It's just, you know, the progress that it is.
It's interesting that you bring up "Sunset for Cowboy." That's one of the ones that jumped out at me. It reminded me of T. Ray Becker. You probably knew him.
Yeah, I don't think so, actually.
He's the former mayor of Main Street, was his self-accrued moniker. People called him that. He always held down the end of the bar over there at the poorhouse, and he was always drinking coffee at the bonfire or whatever it was before the bonfire. And he was an old cowboy, and he produced several CDs. And anyway, "Sunset for a Cowboy" reminded me of some of those lonely cowboy laments that he used to write. And believe me, that's a high compliment.
Yeah, thank you very much. It's just having a huge gap in having lived in the valley, it's hard to remember what, you know, the people that I knew. Some I see on occasion, some are lost to memory. So,
do you look around the Roaring Fork Valley these days and ponder the disappearance of things like cowboys and all of those kinds of things? Because obviously, it's a different valley.
Yeah, you know, it really is. But at the same time, I'm so delighted to see that it's roots have grown in a positive way, in my opinion. Like, there's still the ranching families here, and they're doing more than they've ever done. And, you know, we have three rodeos in Garfield County in the summer, or used to. You know, I mean, that's,
yeah,
you know, a week. That's pretty awesome.
That is.
And I was really excited to go, you know, to see the rodeos when we moved back, my wife and I. And then, you know, also the fact that there's places like Fat Belly that are serving local meat, and that you can buy it still at the co-op. I mean, I remember as a teenager buying, you know, bacon at the co-op, and you can still go and buy Potter Farms at the co-op, you know, frozen and that type of thing. And Missouri Heights is more or less the same. You know, sure, there's more development, but overall, I think everybody in the valley's worked hard to maintain the beauty and what we have here, and we fight pretty hard for that, and that's valuable to me, and that was one of the motivators to move back.
Oh, interesting. So you're not necessarily writing laments for disappeared cowboys in the Roaring Fork Valley. It's something a little different.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously, you know, the cowpoke country is shrinking just due to people moving into the rural west. But seriously, the planning of you know, especially this valley, I think we've taken, you know, yes, there's been massive growth and a lot of building and still is, but it's still a beautiful place. And there's a lot of places I've been where they've just kind of oopsed the planning, and it's not as beautiful as it once was.
Interesting. Well, let's talk specifically about some of the album. You recorded it in Nashville. How did you connect with... what was his name? Give me a minute. Stephen Mogan? How do you say that? Mogan?
Stephen Mogan.
Mogan. How did you connect with him? He was the producer of the album.
Correct. Yes. He is he's a friend of mine, and also was my vocal coach years ago at Rocky Grass Academy up in Lyon, Colorado. And a few years later, I was kind of surveying the world of putting together a record, and I really didn't want to put together a record that wasn't going to be 100%. And he was sort of my first go-to. He had a fledgling studio in just outside of Nashville, and was well connected, being the guitar player for the Sam Bush Band. So I knew he would know guys to be able to make the sound that I was looking for. And, so I hit him up, and, after about 10 minutes, he said he'd do the project, and it blew my mind, honestly. And it's just, he's been great support, and, I think did a phenomenal job engineering it and producing it.
You say he played guitar for the Sam Bush Band, and he brought in the rhythm section from that band, too, to play on your album, didn't he?
Yeah, he certainly did, and they're a crack up. They're good folks.
So that's a plus for you, getting immediately plugged in like that into the session musician scene in Nashville.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other people he brought in were no slouches at all. James Mitchell, just came off a tour with Alison Krauss, Steve Thomas, who toured with Loretta Lynn and the Osbournes back in the day, has just released his debut. I think it's his first bluegrass album, and he plays fiddle and mandolin. I mean, it's Ned Lubarecki's with Becky Bowler Band, and also has Sirius XM's Bluegrass Junction, I believe. Some pretty heavy hitters.
Yeah, that's for sure. And I noticed that a lot of them are bluegrassers. And, you know, I hear a lot of bluegrass influence on your album. And I think I read in the Glenwood Post article that you got kind of turned in that direction by attending a Telluride Bluegrass Festival.
Definitely. You know, I kind of discovered Newgrass Revival and Tony Rice and you know, David Grisman and his quartets back in the day in the 80s. And just, my first year at Rocky Mountain School, a neighbor roommate of mine introduced me to the Grateful Dead. So, and I fell in love with their acoustic, you know, Working Man's Dead and other albums that were more acoustic. And then I went and saw a show, and I was terribly disappointed because, you know, it was more than I was expecting. I thought it would be just a regular old show, but it was quite a scene, as you probably know. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I ended up on the bluegrass side of things, and really loved what you know, Jerry and Dave Grisman and Tony Rice and all those guys back in the day were doing, and had an opportunity. I think it was my second bluegrass. It was Bill Monroe's 70th birthday in Telluride, and I happened to be there for that, and that was just a blowout. That was amazing.
Ooh, yeah. So Old and in the Way, that was probably a formative album for you?
Yeah, worn out, tapes wrecked, records ruined, CDs scratched, played over and over, absolutely.
If you listen to It's Been a Long Time, your new CD, how did Olden in the Way and Grisman and all those guys, how did that inform your efforts on your new album?
Well, the fun part about it is that it allowed me the freedom to not absolutely adhere to three chords and the truth. And I was able to stretch my wings both melodically and rhythmically to kind of create a country sound that still has its roots in bluegrass and still has a little bit of rock and roll in there. It's pretty fun. I know on Hydrocarbon Heaven and Big Show, there's some great ripping guitar solos, and that's done by Corey Congelio. And he turns out, I didn't know he was from New Jersey originally, but he really added the Jersey into it, and that's where I was born. And so that, you know, allowing that sort of flexibility, I think, is really having, you know, I mean, David Grisman's super jazzy. So is Tony. And so I think that, you know, I was able to pull a lot from that.
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned New Jersey, because I heard a little bit of that too. Some of the, and it was, I guess, now that I think about it, it was some of those guitar solos.
Yeah, it's kind of that 80s heavy metal almost, you know. We were laughing after the sessions on those. I said, you just added the right amount of Jersey. And Corey looked at me and he said, I tried to get all the Jersey out of it. And I was like, well, you didn't. It was perfect.
That's good. Did you record this year, or did you do that last year?
It was recorded last December. Uh-huh. We started the project in a year ago, September. And finally laid down the tracks in December, and we did it all as a band. So there was virtually zero overdub of the whole thing. So.
Nice. Was it all one take?
Almost.
Nice.
Almost. We redid my vocal and my guitar, just because we did that as a what they call a scratch track. So that was just me and the vocal on one track, and Stephen wanted to have that separate, so I just redid the song separately. So, but other than that, pretty much it's all the all of us playing at the same time. So,
did you rehearse?
No.
Wow, that's really remarkable that you did that mostly in one take, considering you're playing with musicians that you don't normally play with.
Yeah, no, it blew my mind, and we had a blast doing it. So much so, like on Steel Driver's Lament at the end of the record, it just jams out, and that occurred totally naturally. And Stephen and I were going to fade it out, and we talked about it, and we played with it, and sent files back and forth to each other. And we finally decided that it was so organic that we wanted to use it as the last track and just let it play to the end.
Huh. That's really incredible. How about that? You know, for a lot of people who are thinking about taking the same kind of leap you've now done, you know, jumping into something that you've wanted to do for a long time, you know, I've always wondered about this. And if you don't want to answer this, please feel free not to. But how much did it cost you to put together a CD that you can hold in your hand?
Well, that's still ongoing. But if you want to do, you know, the recording is half the cost. And so it can cost a lot of money to record in the wrong, like if you may find a shark and they might charge you 10 grand. You might find a buddy who can do just as good a job for a few hundred bucks.
Right.
So it's really, you know, it depends. With this production and the players, you know, it was the CD, just the recording alone is like about a third of the whole project. Hmm. So it doesn't, you know, it's not really, it's hard to say to you know, okay, break it out as, you know, the plastic CD, you know, isn't very expensive. So, but, you know, I would say that, you know, this project with the CD in my living room is probably around $6,000.
Uh-huh.
But for you to know about it and everybody else to know about it is at least another $6,000 by the time it's all going to be said and done.
You mean by hiring a radio promoter and all that kind of thing?
Right. I haven't hired anybody. I'm doing this all through my own publishing company, String Kitchen Music. And so it's busier than a one-legged dog in a cat fight, I think is the term.
That's pretty good. So are you going for radio airplay around the country? Or is that?
Yeah.
You are.
Absolutely.
How are you doing that?
I am available on Airplay Direct to DJs all over the country. And I'm also available through CDX Traction, which is another digital distribution company, as well as I'm distributing via CD Baby, which goes to all the streaming platforms. They don't sell anything anymore. They're just a distribution company. So that's the basics of it, and the rest of it is a lot of legwork.
Uh-huh. And I noticed from the Glenwood Post article the other day that you have sold 200 or so CDs and then lots and lots of downloads all over the world.
Yeah. But I was just looking. The UK and the Netherlands seem to be hot on it's been a long time right now.
That's great. You know, Europe is often that way. They just love Americana music. I've noticed that in the past. It's the same with blues. It's blues and Americana. Europeans just go ape. I can't say that. They anyway, they really appreciate that. So it looks like that you're on the road to discovering that.
Yes. And I actually have a lot of family in the UK. They've gotten their share of free downloads. But I think they're probably helping too over there. There's been some downloads in Japan and over in the, you know, Australia, New Zealand, area as well. So, it's starting to really build momentum. It came out on Halloween. So, here we are, you know, a few weeks into the release and I couldn't be more thrilled.
Well, that's great. And that's particularly notable considering you can't tour behind it right now.
Yes. Yeah, we Stephen and I talked about it, about the release, and he basically threw it in my lap and said, whatever you think. And so I kind of hemmed and hawed about it for 6 months. I have a lot of friends who have held their records over till next year at least. And I feel like it's fresh music. Let's get it out there. We can tour when we can tour. And that's, you know, it is what it is. But I think being able to get the record out is the most important. And, I've got some other stuff in the works, so maybe when we're touring, we can, present that stuff at that time.
So is that your plan, when you can, to go ahead and tour behind this?
Yeah.
All over the country? Would that be your ideal?
Well, it depends. Really, it's based on what the markets look like, and where the plays are happening. What radio stations, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
At least at the outset, and that'll determine sort of what happens. But that's right now. Who knows what we're going to be up against when we're given a green light, right?
Well, yeah, you and a million other musicians are going to suddenly hit the road. I imagine it might be a little bit cutthroat.
Right.
Yeah. But, if you have family in the UK, I would suggest you go over there. That would be really fun to tour in the UK, play all the little pubs and churches, and that would be cool.
It would be phenomenal. And I've got a friend in Durango who's Danish, and he was seeing his family over in the Netherlands or in Denmark, sorry. And he said that he was like, we got to go over there. We got to play music. They're going crazy. They love our, love our music and whatnot. So it's in the back of my mind for sure.
And then, of course, no shortage of places to play in your home state either.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Yeah. Yeah. What's next for you, Hugh Phillips?
Well, as far as another record or...
Yeah. Do you have more ideas for a new record, new songs? Are you still writing new songs? What's going on with you?
Yeah, so I am still writing, and I've been diligently practicing my instruments that are a little more problematic for me to learn, and one of them is the dobro. So I've been really trying to put that on the forefront, and just trying to plan for the unplannable right now. But I do have a couple more record ideas, and the next one is most likely going to be more of an acoustic style, kind of trimmed down production that will be coal mining or just mining songs in general. I've written a few originals of the hard rock mining, coal mining country of Colorado, as well as have some really super favorites from other writers like Gene Ritchie. So.
Huh, that's interesting. Well, that would be a great way to exercise your bluegrass chops.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Hugh Phillips, I want to thank you for taking a little time out of your day to talk with us here at Canadian K. Congratulations on your new CD. It's been a long time, and I really appreciate you talking to us. Thank you.
Well, so I'm very thankful for you having me, and I really appreciate the support, and yeah, thanks.